I was actually young at one time. And I asked Srila Prabhupada, the founder of the Hare Krishna movement, I said, what does it mean to be one of your temple presidents? We had 8 devotees at the temple at the time. I was feeling quite important. So I asked, what is it? And I thought that Srila Prabhupada would respond that you're one of my direct representatives, you know, you're the empowered servant of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, something, you know. Prabhupada stopped, sized me up, said, anything goes wrong, it's your fault. It was actually very good instruction. So in the way of a little housekeeping, I was recently at our temple in London, and they have a rule there, if a cell phone goes off, you have to donate £10 to the deity service. So I don't know what the exchange rate is, but to save yourself some money, of course it'd be nice service, take a moment and shut your cell phones off. The other thing is energetic young kids. I'm insignificant, but the message is actually important. So there we go. And everybody thinks it's somebody else's kid. It's yours. So every kid, we will give them 3 times. The kid in the back here is already burning up his credit. But it's actually very hard for kids to sit like this. So it's a good idea now to take them out. Otherwise, when I cast my gimlet stare at you, Hare Krishna. I also wanted to say one other thing in the way of house. There we go. Is there a place for kids to play? Do we have a Sunday school or any kind of... We just send them out to the street and hope... Oh, there's a kid's playroom. What, is it padded? They can bounce off the walls? Or... No, I also raised 2 children. It's difficult for the parents, difficult for the kids. Thank you, Mataji. One other thing. I first visited the Dallas Temple in 1972. 72, 73, I forget exactly which year. And it was just the skeleton of a building then. It was an old church or something, you know. And I just wanted to offer my respects and appreciation to all of you, that the Dallas congregation, the Dallas devotees, who've maintained this beautiful temple and taken such nice care of Radha Kala Chanji. I think he's gained about 10 pounds since the last time I was here. So for what it's worth from an insignificant person like me, but thank you very, very much. Om Agyanata Marandasya Gyana Gyana Salakaya Jokshushu Militangena Tasmire Shri Gurave Namaha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pristaya Bhutale Shrimati Bhakti Vedanta Swaminita Namane Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pacharani Nirvase Sasunyavari Paskachade Satarani Shri Krishna Chaitana Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadada Shiva Sarigo Bhakta Brinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So we are at the end of the month of January. It is the beginning of 2011. I think that's accurate. And I was thinking about that this afternoon. How many people here made New Year's resolutions, either formally or informally? You can raise your hand. Anybody make any new business? You don't have to raise your hand for the next part. How many of you have broken those resolutions yet? Don't have to raise your hand. It's not self-incrimination. But I was thinking about it. What happened here? So I actually have some notes. This sense of time. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, time I am. And we experience those changes, transitions, seasons, these things change. And there's some object lessons. Krishna is the expert designer of this world. One of the things, and we're going to talk about these two things, but one of the things, one, it's an inherent impression or experience that the transitory nature of this world, here today, gone tomorrow. So 2010 is gone, 2011 is here. There's a sense of the transitory nature of this world. If one's thoughtful, one of these songs, here's my little friend. With every rising and setting of the sun, a day passes and is lost. So if one's a little thoughtful, what is it? When I was a kid, we used to sing, row, row, row your boat, what is gently down the stream, merrily, 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 life is but a dream. So one can simply be playing like a fool. Or one can be a little contemplative. So the transitory nature of this world. There's another thing with the cavalcade of time that we can understand, relating to our own self. Hey, my own finality. That this time and tide wait for no one. What does it not ask for who the bell tolls? It tolls for thee. That, you know, we're just playing. But what is the nature of this world? Krishna calls this world a river of names. It's constantly mutable. This world is always changing. What is the Buddhist aphorism? Nothing is certain but change. So a thoughtful person is aware, you know, not that we just, oh, it's 2010, 2000, now I got a new calendar, great, and, you know, I'm going to make some resolutions and lose weight and be a better person. Okay, fine. But what is the actual purpose behind it? The Vedic, just like you have Bible and Biblical, Quran, Quranic, so we have the Vedas, which are our source literature. We have the Vedas and we have Vedic. And the Vedic, it is not simply some sentimental picture. The Vedas are a very profound science. As a sidelight, she's cool, I think, so far. As a sidelight, we say, and our acharyas say, and we have proof to confirm it, that the Vedas were written down 5,000 years ago. They existed by verbal tradition, you know, since the beginning of time, we say. But even if you go to mundane scholars, they all argue over it. They used to say 1,500 years old. Now they say 2,000 years. Now they say 2,500 years. You know, they're moving in the right direction. But even you accept the most conservative estimate of 1,700 years old, the Vedas, in the fifth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Kapila Dev, there's a whole description how from the point of conception, the embryo develops in the womb. It says it's so many weeks, this develops, it tells when the eyes, the whole thing, how 7 months the child becomes conscious. So there's a whole detailed description of how from just when it's, you know, just the original, you know, the ovum and the sperm, from that point, the whole thing is described in exact detail. At least 1,700 years old. I mean, they didn't have ultrasound. How is it possible? So even on a mundane level, the Vedas are very profound. This is way off the track. I was on a morning walk with Srila Prabhupada, the founder of the Hare Krishna movement. And he was walking and he would swing his cane and point to a different, say, what is this, fruit or flower? I know a little bit of my hobby is gardening. And so I said, well, Prabhupada, that is this and this. And no, it doesn't give a fruit and flower. It was a holly. This made the, and Prabhupada would walk a little further, swing his cane. What is this, fruit or flower? I said, well, this one has a berries, but they're actually poisonous. You know, what is this fruit? So he made the point. He said, this should be tomato. This should be eggplant. This should be chili. Then you can make a nice veg. Why plant all these useless things, you know? But then we got a little further and he swung his cane. What is this, fruit or flower? I said, well, Srila Prabhupada, that is a weed. He said, what does that mean, weed? And I said, it means it's useless. Again, he stepped back, sized me up. He said, no, you're useless. And he was right. He went on to explain. He said, actually, everything has a purpose. Krishna, there's an incarnation of Krishna called Dhanvantari that gives Ayurveda. Every plant, it has a medicinal purpose, or is used as a fabric, or it can be used for fuel. Everything has a purpose. So actually, I was the one who was useless. The plant had a purpose. I just didn't know it. It wasn't the plant's fault. So the Vedas are profound in their fields of knowledge. And they describe, have you ever been just, you know how a ray of light, shaft of light will come through a window and that little particle will float up, you know, since these little particles floating up? Because time is measured by distance and space, you know, how the planets around the sun, or, you know, it's just all this different moon around the earth, they have their distance and space. So the measurement, the Vedas go from their smallest measurement is called an anu, and that is the distance that that little particle you see floating up, you know, in like that, in this, you know, the amount of time it takes the sun to cross over that. So we have nanoseconds, and now we have picoseconds. Anything smaller than a picosecond, they're always trying to get smaller. But an anu, you can imagine how. So they go from that most infinitesimal measurement of time. The Vedas go all the way to the entire creation is the inhaling and exhaling of Vishnu. Billions and billions of years. Carl Sagan, I think he's left his body. We don't know. He's probably in kindergarten trying to figure 1 + 1 = 2. You know, who knows where Carl Sagan is now. But he used to say, he said that the Vedic cosmology, the source of the view of the universe and creation found in the Vedas, is the most profound and in accordance with the actual measurements of time that we find in the cosmos, billions and billions of years. So the inhaling and exhaling of Vishnu, billions of years, down to this tiny anu, the Vedas have a view of things. But they analyze, but not just the, we have a field of knowledge. Hey, how long do we go to? What is the usual house rule? Half an hour? Yikes. We'll put it in fast forward. But I love to tell jokes. This is Srila Prabhupada's joke, one of his. Because the point is they know how. They understand how some things work. Even that, they're not too sure about. Gravity. If you ever ask a physicist about the definition of gravity, you'll go in a complete circle and come right back to it. Each definition is simply defining it in its same nature. There's no real substance. It's just a big circle. So they know how, but they don't know why. So the Vedas, they have a profound understanding of how time is working. But they also break the world. Don't help me remember. I want to tell the joke. You're on. We'll test you. Well, maybe I'll tell it now. Limited fields of knowledge. A man was riding on a train in India. And in India, they still have some coal-burning trains. My experience is you get on this, you come out, you're completely gray or black, you know. So man is riding on because the cinders blow. So this man is riding on a train. He gets a cinder in his eye. You can imagine, extremely painful. So his friend goes through the different compartments looking for a doctor. Can't find them. Can't find. Finally, the last compartment. It's a whole compartment load of doctors going to a medical convention. But this one's an oncologist. This one's a cardiologist. This one's a podiatrist. So, you know, he can't. Finally, he finds a guy who's an ophthalmologist, an eye doctor. So he brings him all the way up to the friend. The doctor looks at his guy and he says, "It's in the right eye. I'm a left eye specialist." That's Prabhupada's joke. So, you know, what is the actual purpose behind things? Well, the Vedic literature, the aphorism to the human form of life is atato brahma jigyasya. In the human form of life, it is time to ask questions about Brahman. Who am I? Where have I come from? Sanatana Goswami, one of the great followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, profoundly learned. This is historical. You can go to his house. He was either the prime minister or the finance minister. I get them mixed up. His brother was one or the other. But of Bengal, the entire state of Bengal, now it's Bangladesh and West Bengal, but it was at once one state. It was more power. It was, you know, bigger than France. The British put their capital in Calcutta. You know, that's how rich and opulent it was. And he was the prime minister, historical record, gave up everything and became a follower of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Spoke multi-languages. When he retired, he had a boatload of gold coins he gave away. You can understand the power and influence of this person. When he approached Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he said, "Kayami, I don't know who I am, and I don't know why I'm suffering. I don't know who I am. People call me learned, but I actually don't know who I am." So back to the point I wanted to make. The Vedas have a field called Sankhya Yoga. Just like we have, you know, you break things down into parts. This was, you know, dependent on this. This is dependent on this. And you try to figure out, they're trying to find what the source is. There's famous, I live in San Diego most of the time. University of California, San Diego is there. It's one of the top hard science schools in America. Even MIT shakes when you mention UCSD, biology, nuclear biology. There's a famous quote by one of the professors there recently. Kids are getting a little wild. Where is that? That's right, Mom. I offer my respects. Thank you. Please forgive me. Still somebody back there. We'll get you. He said, I started my, he's an emer, professor emeritus, taught there for 25 years, Nobel laureate. He said, I started my quest searching for life. I've spent 50 years looking. He said, all I'm left is tiny pieces of dead matter. He said, somewhere life has slipped through my fingers. This baby has to go. Please help us. Well, nothing happened, so I guess I'm going to give. Please. All right, whatever. I surrender. The Sankhya Yoga breaks things down into, just like they break it down into pieces. Sankhya Yoga also breaks it down. Thank you, Mataji. Also breaks it down to pieces. And there is an element that's stirring it all together. There's 24 elements. I can go through all of them, but we're pressed for time. But picture a giant soup and something stirring it. This is time that is stirring it. Time, the Vedas analyze that everything we see, from our individual self to cultures to history to whatever it may be, goes through a point of creation, growth, maturation or culmination, decline, dissolution, or death. Gives off some byproducts, but everything is going through this cycle. So that's how, and it's all being stirred by the force of time. Anyone here ever take apart a kaleidoscope? You know what a kaleidoscope, you know, you look through all the colored pictures, right? And it looks like, you know, stained glass windows, very, very beautiful. Yeah. Have you ever taken apart a kaleidoscope? You can, we won't be mad at you. All right. When you take apart a kaleidoscope, all those beautiful, intricate patterns, what are they created by? Anyone know? If you get it wrong, you'll still get prashadam. Don't worry. We'll still be friends. Don't worry. I'm heavy on kids. The rest of you are okay. What's inside? Reflection. Okay. But what's being reflected? You guys are too smart for me. When you take the thing apart, what's making those colors? Little tiny bits of plastic. Thank you. Combined with what? Three mirrors. The triangulation of the mirrors, the light, of course, and the, you know, but that's what's, it's described that that all this world consists of is eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. Basically, the Vedic sages, eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, the bodily functions. But it's put through a mirror of three modes of nature, goodness, passion, and ignorance. And it creates unlimited patterns, and we're chasing after this. Srila Prabhupada was walking one time in Shevet Hills in Los Angeles. And usually they would get out of the car and walk in a particular pattern, you know, to say clockwise. This particular day, Prabhupada launched off counterclockwise. One of the devotees, Prajapati, I think he used to live here. Prajapati Prabhu, he's a thespian voice. He said, I say, Srila Prabhupada, when we walk through the park in a different direction and see all the objects from another angle, it appears to be a brand new park. And you hear Prabhupada on the tape, Prabhupada really starts to laugh. He got such a kick out of it. And Prabhupada said, yes, this is material life. It is the same thing. It is eating, the same thing the dogs are doing, the cats are doing, whatever. Eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. Same thing. But we're seeing it from a little different angle, a little different body, and we think it's a brand new thing. In this way, we continue in this world again and again and again. It's called chewing the chewed. You don't, if you, anyone who's been to India, even South America, certain parts, you know, you'll see it's nice. All the animals are mixed in with the people, you know. And now we just have two-legged animals. We have Dvipada Pashu, but there they have four-legged animals mixing with the people. And you'll see the cows, you know, they chew sugar cane. You spit it out. And when there's no more taste, you spit it out. And you'll see the cows come trying to get a little something out of what already had been chewed. We are doing that lifetime after lifetime after lifetime. But a little different body, a little different circumstance, we think it's brand new. So the this business of New Year's resolutions, there is a sense, this change, seasonal changes, time changes, is a sense of betterment. Let me better myself. Let me, if nothing else, let me avoid suffering and increase my pain. These calculations are there. You do not find this. The dogs. A dog is barking. This is the constitutional nature of a dog. Dogs are barking. You never hear of a dog, New Year's, January 2011, the dog thinks, what has this mailman ever done to me? I'm literally hounding the poor man. Let me stop barking. From this day forth, I will no longer bark. We, as a sidelight, in Sandia, we have a dog, a big dog, the thing's like half beast, and it used to jump up and scare the daylights out of the devotees. We started giving him a little prasadam, burfi, a little pakora, this and that. The dog has become just like a pussycat. And he gets ready to bark. His name is Roscoe. We say, Roscoe, no more burfi. He'll completely go, lie down and be completely quiet. So you can't, with prasadam, you can soothe the savage beast. But internally, the dog isn't thinking. He doesn't have any sense of remorse or a sense of betterment. There's a type of bird, especially in Mayapur, I'm sure they're all over the place, but he makes a wonderful nest. He takes the, what do you call it? Coconut palm, coconut palm. He has those palm frond, we call it. He takes the tips and bends it around and then makes a net that hangs like a sack and there's a hole in it. It's quite far out, You see him make it. But that bird never thinks, the same thing every year. I'm putting a sun porch on this year, He never thinks, he doesn't think like that, He does the same thing. But a human being, we're always calculating how to increase our happiness, how to improve our situation. When did we start? Okay, we got a little time. Something going on back there? All right. Hare Krishna. Tell me when you're done. No, everybody's watching you instead of listening. That's what's happening. Anyway, Hare Krishna. The Vedas break things down into three. There's the seer. If you could stop, it'd be really nice. Prabhu? Prabhuji? Yes? Shanti, shanti, shanti. Thank you. The Vedas break things down into three stages. Seer, seen, and the act of seeing. Let's strip for a moment religious, ethnic, cultural trappings. Oh, you believe so many things. It's all magical thinking. Krishna lifted Govardhan Hill and we're, whatever. I don't care about any of it. Let's say I'm a brass tacks, down to earth, show me man. No one can deny the experience of seer, seen, and the act of seeing. I'm sitting here. I'm seeing this nice young brahmachari, effulgent face. And there's the act of seeing. We all have a sense of our individual identity. In fact, if we're not treated as you've treated me impersonally, people become very miffed, bent out of shape. Hey, I'm a person. I have individual rights. What is it, the American Constitution? We hold these rights to be self-evident. Just like if you start with the aphorism, I think, therefore I am. The Vedas give a very nice example. The Vedas say, the Bhagavad Gita says that this body is a city of nine gates. You can do the math, two eyes, two nose, mouth, you can add it up. The body is a city of nine gates, and we are residing within that city, and we all have that sense. Prabhupada was speaking one time at it was in England actually, at a young boy's school. And they were bouncing all over the place, and Prabhupada was expert according to the audience. He stopped one of the young boys and said, like Simon says, he said, point to your foot. The boy pointed to his foot. Point to your leg. Yeah, you can do it. Point to your leg. Point to your head, right? So many things. Point to you. Now she becomes stunned. Because who am I? I know my component parts, but who am I actually? And we have a sense that I'm dwelling within this body, looking throughout these eyes. It is a machine, yantra, it's called. It's a machine, or I'm looking out through the city of nine gates. All right, fine. But you're just the brain. It is just the brain, and the brain, as a super elaborate computer, has created consciousness. All you really are is a bunch of synapses firing. In fact, by genetic engineering, we're going to be able to continue, you know, we can grow you a new liver, we can grow you this, eventually we'll be able to make a whole new body, which is a complete bluff, that's a whole other thing. And simultaneously, we can just clone your brain. You know, we'll just figure out, we'll get a nice computer, we'll get it elaborate enough, and in due course, we can download your brain. If you have a new body, just make a backup copy, and you can live eternally, you know? Let me give you an example of what's wrong, because that's what people believe. That actually from the brain, eventually, if it gets sophisticated, just like I can take, well, let me give an example, because I'm worried about time. I can set up a camera that is light sensitive and that has a speaker. If I want to be even fancier, it can have a, it can have a printer, it can have, even fancier, it can have a speaker. And it can be tuned that it's sitting on the, it's watching the sunset. And as the sun sets and the sky becomes painted with those beautiful sherbet colors, the machine can sing verses for Shakespeare. But there's no ghost in the machine. There's no experience actually happening. It's simply we can break it all down to pluses and minuses, all to, you know, little circuits firing. The presentation is, because we've made a lot of it, it's called the China. Let me give you the Chinese room example. I'll give you a quick one. Anybody here ever seen one of those little pocket calculators that you can translate language? You can say, I want a samosa in English, and it'll come out in Chinese, or, you know, whatever it is. You had that experience. Now, we know that in that computer is simply a bunch of circuits, pluses and minuses, little impulses are flowing, electrical impulses are flowing through the thing. And there's a program written, and according to the program, you get the result. And it does amazing things, right? In theory, what is the big stadium here? Is a big, what is your, Cow Palace still? Whatever it is, huh? Cow Palace, we'll call it? How many people does it fit in there? 100,000, very good, thank you. I need a fact man in the room. Stay with me. So, in theory, you could write a, you know, they used to do, I don't know if they still do it in colleges, the what do you call it, the rev team, you know, the boosters. They used to have, whatever they are, you got the idea. But the ones in the, they used to have a stack of cards, and they would hold up a card, and you've got, you know, hundreds of people, and they would paint out the team logo or the team's name or whatever, right? They don't even know what they're doing. They just hold up the card. They're just numbered. In fact, there was Caltech one time snuck in. It was a USC game. This was in the Rose Bowl. And they switched all the cards. And so when they thought they were holding up, you know, USC or Go Trojans or whatever, you know, I don't know, Go Cowboys, whatever your team is. But they were, it was all, you know, Caltech and USC sucks or, you know, whatever it was. They had their own thing. And the people, they had to do it three or four times, and people would say, whoa, the whole thing's been switched, and they had to shut it down. Because the individuals had no idea what they were holding up. Okay, back to our Cow Palace, 100,000 people, right? Now, you could design that as a computer for translating Chinese. It's the same thing. I'm sitting here. If I get a 1 from this side, I put a 0 this side. If I get a 0 from this side, I put a 1 from, why not? Those people, I can work as a, you know, one of those connectors or one of those synapses. And I just design a program. If you have enough people, because the premise is big enough brain, long enough time, and you'll create consciousness. And that's just what happened over time from a little bacterium, you know, here, now here we are. So let's follow my example. Picture the Cow Palace, picture 100,000 people, picture it programmed. I can ask a question at one end, let's say, you know, one end of the field. I want a samosa, or I want, you know, whatever it is. I lost my car keys. So it'll go all the way through. They'll and I will get an answer in Chinese. My question, isn't it Why not? But let me ask you a question. Did anyone in that stadium learn one single word of Chinese? Did they ever have any knowledge they were even translating Chinese? Did all of a sudden Ode to Joy go off and they were all fluent speakers of Chinese? No. Why do we think that if you get a big enough computer, the brain, and it fires enough and can answer enough complicated questions, Ode to Joy will go off and all of a sudden, I am, and there'll be a ghost in the machine? It is ludicrous. It is a cheating propensity. Let me give another example. Because the Vedas ask us to look at the world in a different way. Anyone here know the shortest distance between two points? We'll still be friends if you get it wrong. Straight line. Who said straight line? Defend your answer. I say not necessarily so. Let me give you an example. On a two-dimensional plane, you're completely correct. Here's point A, here's point B, straight line. If I add the third dimension of height, if I put the Himalayan mountains there, whoa, lo and behold, the shortest distance is a curve around them. So when you add a new factor, the previous assumptions are completely gone. What's the main street downtown? What's the name street? Give me a big intersection downtown Dallas. Where was that big skyscraper building? Commerce in Maine. So suppose, what's your name, young man? Naveen. My name is Badri Narayan Das. Nice to meet you. We'll talk later on. So suppose Naveen and I, we're going to talk later on. We're going to meet on the corner of Commerce and what? Commerce and Maine. 3 o'clock tomorrow. And being a very intelligent, responsible man with a working watch, he's there at 2:45. No sign of me. He waits. You think, well, Indian Standard Time? What's happening here, you know? And after a certain point of time, he says, forget it. You know, he's a busy man. He's got a life. He said, you know, he waits till 3:30. He said, well, something must have happened. Maybe he got struck by lightning. Who knows? Hey, it could happen. No one's got a message from Yamaraj. And then I meet you the next day. I say, Naveen Prabhu, where were you? I waited till 3:30. I was there. I was there even early. How is it possible that he and I were in the same spot at the same time and didn't even see each other? I'll give you an example. There was a building there on that corner of Commerce and Maine. He's on the first floor. I'm on the third floor. On one hand, two-dimensionally, we're in the exact same place. You add another dimension of height, we don't have any experience of each other. We live in a multidimensional universe. Even the physicists will tell us, you know, there's so many dimensions. I don't know how many dimensions they're up to now. And the Vedas describe, we're in a multidimensional universe. So the point is, if I go to school, when I was in high school, there was a kid, the football coaches loved him. The guy was a bit of a dimwit, no offense. I mean, he didn't graduate. And the guy was, you know, he was shaving, driving a car. He was 6'6", 200 pounds, 50 pounds. You know, they had him on the front line of the football team for 4 years. They loved him. And he was having a great time. You know, wood shop, you know, clay, pottery, you know, whatever. But let me ask you a question. What is the success of a school? Is the success, you ask kids when they first go to college, they're having a great, their parents aren't there, send the laundry home, send money from the parents. What's not the love, you know? But you talk to a senior in college, they all say, I want to get out into the real world. Except those who go on and get a BS or a master's and PhD and so many things. What is the measure of the success of the high school or the college? To make it even easier, if I check into a hospital, hey, motorized bed, get to pick a menu, pretty nurses, free cable, hey, no rent, what's not to love? And the doctor comes in, oh, Mr. Narayan, here's your shot. They got a horse needle. They're coming up. Whoa, whoa, whoa. You know, I'm here for the free cable, you know, and that's not why I'm here. You know. What is it? Munchkin's disease? There's a disease that people keep inflicting pain so they can stay in hospitals. Yeah, there it is. So, thank you. Second fact, man. Thank you. What is the measure of the success of the school? Or what is the measure of the success of the college? That you're there forever? No. What's the measure of success? Get a degree, fine. But what's the actual physical? That you leave. That you get out. That you go on to a real and positive and productive life. The purpose of this world is not for us to simply enjoy. This body is not designed for us to enjoy. There's a thing in archaeology. It's called function from form. You know, they get all their pot. They love pot shards. They're always digging around for pot shards. The idea is you take all those pot shards, you put them together, and you get an object. And from that object, then you can deduce how the society functioned. So from the form, they can conclude the function. It's common sense. Let us look for, let's assume this is a form. It's designed for a purpose. Let's analyze from the form what the function is. This body, is it designed for us to enjoy? If I love to titillate my tongue, why not be an elephant? Bales of hay. I can eat all day long. If my boyfriend, girlfriend is my business, why not be a rabbit in Arizona? You know, why have the human? Well, this human form isn't designed for that. Well, I can sleep. Bears can hibernate. Well, I don't know what their record is. We have some brahmacharis working on this, but the bear still wins. How long can I sleep for, you know? What is this? Man is called the rational animal. I think, therefore I am. Seer, seen in the act of seeing. Who am I in this body? What is the purpose of this world? If there is a God, a designer, you don't think he could do a better job? If this world is designed for us to enjoy, what's the next logical question? Why isn't it more enjoyable? This is the best God. Birth, death, disease, old age, cancer. There was a guy, I swear to you, in a place called, it's called Yuma, Arizona. Anyone ever been to Yuma? They say there's humans in humans. Anyone ever been to Yuma, Arizona? There was a guy who was struck dead by a bowling ball flying out of the sky. Somebody was flying to Arizona to Las Vegas for a bowling competition. The plane was losing, and he threw everything he could, you know, for ballast as the plane was coming down, threw out his bowling ball. Bam! Hit some guy in the head. What is our guarantee that that's not going to happen to us? The Govinda Das describes that this world is like a drop of water on a lotus leaf. Any moment. I was in a, getting the tires fixed on my car. And there's these two big guys, you know, they're burly guys working away. And the one guy says to the other guy, hey, what are you doing this weekend? Oh, I don't know. Yeah, they're talking. And the one guy said, oh, I'm just killing time. I thought, no, you're not killing time. Time is killing you. So a thoughtful person, we have so many desires, and I'm thinking of the time factor, we're going to wind up. We have so many desires. There was a blind man, poverty-stricken, and childless. So here's the condition. I'm going to ask you. Ready? Yeah, get ready. Here's the conditions. Blind, childless, poverty-stricken. And he somehow or other comes in contact with a genie and he has one wish. And no, he cannot wish for unlimited wishes. Nice try. So blind, poverty-stricken, childless, and one wish. What does he wish for? He wishes to see his children from the roof of his palace. Wishes to see his children from the roof of his palace. Way to go, man. Got all three. Our simple presentation is we all want to become happy, but we're doing it in the wrong way. We're trying to do it through this vehicle, through this material world. We're trying to do it through this dead material matter. If Prabhupada used to say, if you wash coal, will it ever become white and clean? You know, it's the nature of the thing. My mother, I had a very good mother. I'm deeply indebted to her. No, mother's Adi Guru, no doubt about it. My mother used to take us to picnics at the beach. Ocean Beach. And we would lay out a nice picnic lunch, my brothers and sisters, we'd all play this and that. But my mother would always complain, we'd have a picnic lunch, there's sand in everything. And I remember thinking as a kid, hey, hang on a minute, we're at the beach. How will there not be sand? It's the nature of the place, you know? Birth, death, disease, and old age. It is the nature of this place. I describe Sankhya Yoga, the six cycles that everything goes through. This body goes through. Human form of life, not the how, but the why. Where have I come from? Where am I going? I was on a morning walk with Srila Prabhupada one time. He stopped, turned, sized us all up, and said, I know you're all atheists, but there really is Krishna. And turned right around and kept right on walking. So we are doubters personified. Srila Prabhupada was peeling a tangerine, one of those nice Indian tangerines, you know? He was peeling the tangerine, looked at us incredulously. I mean, it was innocent and yet profound. And he said, how can they say there's no God? It comes so nicely packaged. And you look at, I mean, everything we, you know, how does the world end? Not with a bang, but a whimper, you know? How is it all going to end? We're going to be buried under plastic. Forget, you know, a dirty bomb. We're doing it ourselves with plastic. But Krishna's nice tangerine is completely biodegradable. It enriches the soil. It comes in individual serving segments. You know, I mean, it's amazing. So one time someone said to Prabhupada, show me God. Now, Prabhupada had a number of ways of answering this. We don't have time for that. But one blissful answer, all were blissful. But Prabhupada said, that's not the question. The question is, why can't you see God? We are seeing God everywhere. How, you know, you're saying, show me God. Why can't you see God, you know? I was sitting in Srila Prabhupada's room one time. It was cold for Southern California. It dipped to 50. So we were all feeling deeply inconvenienced. We were all bundled up. And if you ever go to the Los Angeles temple, I highly recommend it. One, they've got all of Prabhupada's rooms just as they were. It's really sweet and sublime. So Prabhupada was sitting behind a low desk like this. And if you go there, you'll see there's a window behind him, a big window, cold day. Everyone's all rugged up, as they say in Australia. And there was a beautiful ray of sunlight came right down and was bathing only Srila Prabhupada. He was caught in that shaft of golden light, you know. We were cold. He was bathed in this warm light. And it was a very mystical, blissful setting, you know. And Prabhupada also, of course, picked up on it. Prabhupada was profoundly cute, aware of whatever was happening. And Prabhupada chuckled to himself and he said, yes. He said, someday you will feel this sunlight like your lover's embrace. Krishna says, I'm the light of the sun and the moon. You know, Krishna says, I'm the pure taste in water. For someone who experienced it, Prabhupada says that he was experiencing that sunlight literally like a lover's embrace. I was sitting in Prabhupada's room one day. He said, you think you're sitting on the floor? I am sitting on the hand of Krishna. Pretty jazzy. We're almost done. No, he's a kid. Kids, he gets to spend it. But his father, is that your father next to him? Hey. Prabhupada was walking in a zoo in Calcutta. And the tiger, anyone ever seen a Bengal tiger? They're, I don't know what they're, 900 pounds, 1,000 pounds? They are a serious, you know, you can put Bruce Lee in there. I'm betting on the tiger, I'm telling you right now. One smack and he's gone, you know? So the tiger, you know, was irritated. The tiger was roaring, you know? And the little kid, 6, 8 years old, was roaring back, fearless. Anyone know why? Miscalculation, but sweet. He had his father's hand. Saying, I am my father here. So I'm fearless, you know? And Prabhupada, oh geez, well, just for fun, and I'll be quick. I was on a morning walk with Srila Prabhupada in Lakeshore Park in Chicago, right by Lake Evanston, by, you know, Lake Michigan. There's maybe 15 devotees walking with Prabhupada. Maybe 20, actually. Out of one of these driveways, big fancy homes, this huge dog. I mean, he was a beast. He was half horse. He said, oh, running down the driveway, you know? And we all froze for a minute. Literally, we froze for a minute, you know? Prabhupada threw his chadar over his shoulder, stepped forward, swung his cane, and went, "Hut!" The dog turned right around and ran back up the driveway. And he looked at us, you know, all big, strong young men, like, what's the use of you, you know? He was right. So on a small scale, on a large scale, Prabhupada at the end of his life, after giving his entire life to the service of others, Prabhupada was lying on his disappearance bed. There was no fatty tissue. Literally, the skin was pushing the nerves on the bones. And you can see pictures. To the last minute, Srila Prabhupada, in perfect lucidity, was translating the Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto. You can read those purports. There's no interruption. One of my friends, his father, well, he's passed away, but his father was a doctor in Delhi, prominent doctor. Prabhupada stayed at his house. He was very fond of Prabhupada. The son said, you know, Prabhupada's moving according to Krishna's will. Prabhupada said his life is finished. His work is done. He wants to leave this world. But still, can you just go see him? So in those days, he had, well, two cars in India, black and white ambassadors. That's it, you know. So they all loaded in the ambassadors. They drove Delhi to Vrindavan. Maybe it's a three-hour drive, 2.5, 3 hours, whatever. An assemblage of doctors. Dr. Karana, my friend's father, told me this story personally. He said he walked in. He was shocked to see Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada's lying like Bhishma Dev on the bed of arrows, you know. An ordinary man, he told me, Dr. Karana told me, an ordinary man would have been writhing in pain in this condition. Dr. Karana is there with his assembly of doctors. Srila Prabhupada looks up, says, "Oh, Dr. Karana, how are you? How is your wife? How is your family? Oh, you must have been tired traveling such a distance." Turned to Shama Sundar, said, "Please find them a room in the guest house." He says to Dr. Karana, "Take a little rest, take some prasadam, come back and we'll talk." Dr. Karana, and he's a sober guy, told me personally, he began to cry. He said, "All of my life, I'm a doctor, you know, I'm going to see people in this condition. They're all, you know, can you, they're on the drip, can you give me another week?" Or they're, you know, why? They're, you know, and they're writhing in pain. Here is someone completely fearless, completely detached, and asking how I am doing, concerned about my well-being after a short drive from Delhi. He just couldn't accept, he couldn't believe such a transcendental personality. My point is, just like the small boy holding into Krishna's hand, his father's hand in the tiger roaring, you know, Durga rides on a tiger. This material nature will devour all of us. But if we're holding on to Krishna, we are fearless from the greatest fear, which is fear of death, fear of what happens to this body. I've seen it again and again and again. This is for us. This is not a fictitious state achieved by someone living in the Himalayas, living on 2 chickpeas a day and okay, but forget it for me. This is a state that is our birthright, our spiritual inheritance. By that I mean spiritual birth. Each of us is meant to come to that stage. Do not settle for second best, the dry, dull, dead material nature. One last thing, I promise. You can shut off the mic if I don't. Nityananda Prabhu said that this is the year of the holy name for the Dallas temple, that they've made a vow. We have a different range in this audience, all different levels of consciousness, commitment, understanding, certainly no doubt about it. I was in Balboa Park. It's a big park in San Diego. We have a nice pond that we set up. We chant. And there was someone who used to stay in our temple, stayed for a few weeks and fell away. His problem was he couldn't give up drinking. Name is Irving. So we saw him in the park. I was with another devotee, Gunagrai Marsh. I think some of the Dallas devotees know Gunagrai Marsh. So we saw him, and he was in just a disheveled, very sad state. I mean, he was covered with his own, you know, vomit, and he was, you know, smelled like a brewery, and he was obviously inebriated, and you know, just, you know, can imagine how many things are wrong in this picture, right? So we said to him, "Irv, you know, what happened? Just, you know, come back to the temple. We'll clean you up. Be a devotee. Be happy." He was obviously miserable. "No, no, no, I can't do that." We said, well, at least stop drinking. I mean, if you let a stick, lit a stick of incense next to him, he was emitting so much alcohol, you were blown up, you know? We said, can you at least stop drinking? No, I can't do that. He was hacking and coughing. We said, Irv, just, can you stop smoking? No, I can't do that. So Gunagrai Maharaj asked, well, where are you living? He said, I'm living in the women's bathroom at the park. So Maharaj said, at least move to the men's bathroom. And that he could do. He said, all right, I'll do that. I can make that step forward. Prabhupada told me personally that we are sitting on a fence. We are marginal potency. Spiritual nature is on this side, material nature is this. The jivatma is marginal potency. We have some facility of free will. Prabhupada said, if you lean, what is it? The law of reciprocity. Yeyatam mam prapadyante. As you surrender to Krishna, Krishna reciprocates. But Krishna's ratio, what was that Madoff guy who made off with everybody's money? What did he offer? Anyone know? I don't have to mention if you know. But I think it was like somebody told me 15% or something like that. That's an amazing rate of return, isn't it? Prabhupada told us, you take one step to Krishna, Krishna will take 10 to you. So what's that rate of return? Is it 1,000% rate of return? Shh, why not invest in Krishna? It's the best rate of return, you know? Prabhupada called yeyatam mam prapadyante the law of reciprocity. As you surrender to Krishna, he reveals himself accordingly. If you're leaning on a fence, you lean this way, what will happen? What will happen? Young ladies, what will you lean this way on a fence? What will happen? You've encountered the law of gravity, I'm sure. You'll fall that way, right? And if you lean this way, what will happen? You'll fall that way. If you lean towards Krishna, same analogy, what will happen? You won't fall. Very intelligent. That's a nice, I like that answer. That's a good answer. A good 10 points for you. But following the analogy, yeah, good answer. If you lean towards Krishna, you'll fall to Krishna. Krishna will pull you. And if you lean towards Maya or illusion or darkness, what will happen? There you go. So our humble request on behalf of the devotees here in Dallas is that wherever you're at, lean towards Krishna. We can all increase. If you're not doing it, chant some japa. Anyone have japa mala? Can we hold up one set of japa mala beads, exhibit A? These prayer beads, you'll find in every spiritual tradition, Muslim, Jewish, Christian, they're all this chanting the names of God on beads and the efficacy of it. And it doesn't matter how you say it. There was a Sanskrit scholar. I was sitting in the room. He wanted to impress Prabhupada. He said, is it Krishna? Is it Krishna? Is it Krishna? Prabhupada said, don't worry. He knows who's calling. You know? Just chant. Don't worry about it, you know? Chant with devotion. Don't worry about it. He knows who's calling. So our simple point is, chant. We, you know, I saw a figure. I wish I could remember it. How much time the average person spends in his lifetime waiting for the light to turn red. It's a number of hours. It's like 20, 30 hours just waiting for the light to turn red. We waste so much time. Take a few minutes. Chant the Hare Krishna mantra in the morning. Chant one round. Chant two rounds of japa. Chant a little bit in the evening. Prabhupada called it the Krishna conscious sandwich. There's a guy next to me in my apartment. I have my office in a little apartment. He wakes up every morning to a weekday to a clock radio. And it's always bam, and it's bad news. It's always bad news. And I hear the guy, he stumbles out of his stupor, and his first words out of his mouth are, oh, and I won't say it. Because he doesn't want to go to work, he doesn't want to get out of bed, it's all bad news on the radio. Wake up, take a shower, chant a little Hare Krishna mantra, and your whole day is bright and auspicious, you know? Read a little bit of Bhagavad Gita. People are reading Dear Abby in the newspaper, advice. And as a sidelight, my friends, she's been divorced twice. It's like taking driving lessons from a blind man, you know? So we're all taking advice. Why not hear from the timeless wisdom of Vedic literature? So I'll go on. My point is, eating, instead of what there's, just, if one eats animal flesh, what to speak of beef, it says in the Manusamhita that you have to take as many lifetimes, many births, as there are on the hairs on the cow. And here's a factoid for you. I was recently at our farm in West Virginia. They have Dairyman's Magazine. They're farmers. They got Dairyman's Magazine. They're looking through the thing. There was an advertisement for a bactericide or something antiseptic. You know, you wash the cows. It said in there that the average cow has 1,700 hairs per square inch. You do the math. Anyone here, someone, you can help me out here. You don't have to do it now. Figure out the circumference of a cow. Figure out what the square inches are. And multiply by 1,700 births. Right. And we know where Colonel Sanders is going, you know, from who, you know, he's out in some farmyard somewhere. So my simple point is, whatever we're doing, take a step forward. Whatever you're doing, read, chant. Instead of eating, there's so many nice things to eat. And not only eat, not just be a vegetarian, but instead of tossing in the microwave and woofing it like an aboriginal beast, take 5 minutes, 3 minutes, have a nice picture of Krishna and offer it to Krishna. Offer it to get a nice picture of Radha Kala Chandra, picture of Prabhupada, and offer it. You don't even have to learn our verses. Just say, Krishna, please, thank you. You've given me some nice food stuff. Offer my, please, thank you. That's it. Just do that. So thank you very much for sitting so patiently. Please lean towards Krishna, and we should end. We're over time. Hare Krishna.